A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
But you don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to now.
I'm down Twanfield, and we'll see them.
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
If you've been listening to this podcast all season, you will know how much we enjoy watching Darwin Núñez play football. So much so, my heart sank when the team came in before the Carabao Cup final, and I realised he wasn't going to be playing. The realisation dawned on me at that point that Núñez is the most watchable player in the Premier League. But that status was put into doubt yesterday by his own teammate, Luis Diaz. Any player who collects the ball in the middle of a potentially title-deciding match, surrounded by two of Manchester City's more intimidating players in Kyle Walker and Rodri, and decides he's just going to beat them all ends up, he's all right by me. Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Owen, how are you
that
doing?
Was a ridiculous
match,
wasn't it?
Man. He beat them all ends up and still had the ball blocked by Kyle Walker at the very end of it. Yeah. But who cares? It was just so exhilarating. Similar to Núñez, you're never totally sure what the end product is going to be with Diaz, especially in front of goal. There was a BCM for Diaz yesterday.
Oh,
but I'm kind of beginning to realise that that's not even the point. Who cares about misses? If anything, that just makes him more fallible and enjoyable to watch. Gavin Cooney and Dion Fanning are both on today. They're both in studio. I will acknowledge this title decider label is very annoying to Arsenal fans, who might well point to a little something called the league table and their spot at the very top of that table. They've got a Champions League knockout tie to turn around tomorrow night. For all our football coverage during the week, you're going to have to be signed up to the World Service on secondcaptains.com for only a fiver a month plus VAT. Ken, please report on sport.
Yeah, Luis Diaz, I mean, you've given him a pretty good write-up. There.
Charitable, I would say. You know, others watching that game yesterday may have been less enthused by his let's miss three massive chances in like 4 minutes or whatever it was in the second half.
Did he miss three?
Well, he missed one in the first half where he had a pretty clear shot from the edge of the box, which I think was a very scorable chance. Then the one where Salah played him through with his first touch.
Yeah, that's the one that I recall most vividly, bearing down on goal.
And then there was another one where Núñez played it into
square
the box
across him brilliantly, and he just,
was it Walker who tackled him?
Núñez
on the
himself
touch.
Misses big chances as well. What's the big deal?
I hadn't noticed.
He scores them too.
I was watching that thinking, you know, I wonder if Darwin Núñez ever considered staying onside at any point. Like, he was offside 5 times in the first half. I think it was 6 times altogether, although I've also seen reports that it was only 5. But 5 was already equaling the record for most offsides by a player in a Premier League match at half-time. You know, and I thought, yeah, you need to maybe sort that out. Because It's sapping the momentum a little bit. But, it was a great game. You know what impresses me about these games, really? And you saw at the end with the what appeared quite affectionate embrace between Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola.
There's a mutual respect there.
You know, it's nice to see their friends. You know, they seem to be...
Don't go too far.
Well, he said maybe we could become friends.
It was the only bum nut of what was an exceptional game.
What
it was just
it?
How friendly both managers and players were.
But the managers generally have been friendly.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. It's the only bum nut.
But it is. It's very unusual.
Give me United Arsenal any day of the week.
Well, this is the thing. You know, for kind of a long-term rivalry like that... for there to be so little apparent rancor between the teams. Now, I know there has been various episodes. I think between the fans is a bit different.
Yeah.
There was the Trent Alexander stuff last week where he was like, you know, this means more.
It does.
And, you know, there have been a few episodes that Man City singing some song about whatever it was at the time. There have been a couple of things, but generally to see this, you know, that it hasn't sort of festered into something really ugly over such a long period of time, over so many sort of games, so many iterations, is pretty remarkable.
I think it's all right, Murph. I don't think you need to. You wanted something like the Tuchel Conte handshake stuff to.
I mean, they
really get
yourself playing
excited.
Each other for 5 minutes.
I was extremely excited by yesterday's match, despite lack of rancor between the managers.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I just wanted to complete the bingo card. Is all I'm saying.
If you compare it to the Barcelona Madrid rivalry when Guardiola and Mourinho were there. I mean, that was evil. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, but like, I suppose Mourinho had literally was like, we need to do this.
Yeah.
And he was right. You know, his evil.
He was 100%.
His evil method worked. Pep had a kind of a breakdown and decided he had to leave. And Madrid won the league. So,
if Klopp had a bit more of that dog in him, then Guardiola would have probably have left the
city. Klopp has that dog in him. He just aims all his dog at poor Chris Wilder.
Oh, Chris Wilder. Well, see, Chris Wilder was hitting back.
Oh, was he?
Heading back against his critics. Not against her.
No, because they haven't had, since he came back in the Premier League, I don't think they've had any incidents. This is dating back to his first stint.
No, they haven't had any incidents. But he did have an incident with the Liverpool media outrider, Jamie Carragher, who he, I don't know if you watched that one, but there was a certain exasperation to Jamie Carragher's commentary on Sheffield United 0, Arsenal 5 at halftime last Monday, where he pronounced them the most disgusting thing he'd ever seen.
Hideous creatures.
This is the most
a vile
grotesque
assault on my football
violation
that I've
ever seen in the league. and Chris Wilder's had a pop back at him saying, you know, these guys, the criticism is lazy. They don't understand it. They come out with a narrative and just say things. So he was talking about, obviously, Sheffield United had a 2-2 draw against Bournemouth where they were winning in injury time, ended up not winning, so disappointment, but still better than they expected. 2-2 away to Bournemouth wasn't bad. I mean, he talked about the, you know, what teams like this can do to you, like Villa for half an hour and Arsenal for 45 minutes. They tear you apart. The gulf becomes enormous. Pundits take the easy way out, saying they're the worst team in the Premier League. You have to look at injuries in terms of being able to put a consistent side out. Then he talked about the narrative. That's there's the narrative, isn't there? The narrative. Sheffield United are the worst team in the world. Burnley are waiting to kick in. And Luton are going for Europe. That seems to be the narrative.
Is it? I have not heard anyone praising Burnley for waiting to kick in. Maybe not bar the first couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. I think he's been a bit oversensitive there because Burnley have been...
Was Carragher eating a sandwich or something? Just sitting there in his commentary box eating a sandwich in front of a Premier League manager. Do you remember this one from a few weeks ago?
Oh, don't worry. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
The Wilder sandwich thing was good.
I have a lot of admiration for what Vincent Kompany has done, but that is the narrative. Anyway, that was...
We're getting bogged down in Burnley. I think Vincent, because he's Vincent Kompany, maybe he is getting a bit of a freer pass than other managers might do, but I do get the sense that when Burnley are on, they're getting fairly pilloried and he... You know, he is to an extent getting criticised for not changing style enough from the possession-based football that took them up.
Yeah, I mean, so the game at Anfield was...
They have crossed the magical 36-point mark, though, Sheffield United, over the course of their last two Premier League seasons. I think Wilson was was tweeting that at the weekend. I mean, that's pretty
bad. Let's get back to the top
of
the table.
It's true. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the first 10 or 15 minutes, City were really... kind of cutting Liverpool apart, and they look like, oh no, this is going to be a real, you know, Liverpool haven't turned up to this. They're kind of making it look easy here, and then sort of slowly just managed to get back into it. I mean, notwithstanding the goal, Man City obviously scored the set piece goal. I mean, it was a big weekend for set piece coaches. Mm-hmm. It was just the sort of energy they threw into the game. I mean, I saw Mats Hummels tweeting, there are not five teams in the world who can play at this intensity for 90 minutes, an unbelievable game. This is, he was obviously watching in Germany or whatever. But yeah, I think it's kind of, I mean, I saw some, there were some quotes from Rodri who had one of his, I don't want to say bad games. I mean, he still had like 95% of his passes or whatever. You know what I mean? He was hitting a lot of his usual markers, but I thought he was definitely not in control, which is unusual. He had been talking before the game to L'Equipe, basically saying, he said the Premier League and La Liga are two different sports. The key is understanding the rhythm. You can't play at the same rhythm in La Liga as in the Premier League because your teammates won't follow you and you will isolate yourself with the ball. Spain's patient and tactical. The teams know more about what they want to do with the ball. In England, it's a question of intensity. Then he talks about his debut against West Ham and how, you know, whoa, it was like, it was so, they went 5-0, but, I didn't have half a second to think and I already had an opponent on me, you know, so.
Said after laying on two goals in a 5-0 win.
Yeah, but, you know, and I don't say he met his match, but I was very impressed with Endo, who just seems to be able to get to the ball so effectively. Which a lot of it has to do with, he's not really that quick, but he does have a good sense of where to be before he needs to be there. You know what I mean? And so he's often arriving at the same time as the ball to make a challenge, and has been really good. McAllister obviously was really good. But yeah, it's, we're going to talk in a bit more detail about that, I think, with the two guys. So you mentioned Arsenal. And they are top, and they came through a test against Brentford. It's interesting to see Arsenal playing against Brentford. They, this is the kind of game that for years killed Arsenal under Arsene Wenger. This was exactly the kind of game where they always, you know, it used to be Bolton, or Stoke, and Wenger would say, oh, they play rugby. And all of the Bolton or Stoke fans would be like, ah. I remember seeing Arsenal getting beaten. I was at Stoke to see Arsenal. I think it was 3-1 in some game against Stoke in, you know, the John Walters era of Stoke. I think Van Persie was playing for, and it was around that time, 2011 maybe. And it was
you've never seen a stadium enjoy themselves
it
more.
It was just, it was ridiculous. And they were all singing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot and all this kind of stuff, you know. And it was just the utter loathing of Arsenal and what they represented. The sort of snooty, continental, you know, not really English type of weak Arsenal, which they pounded into oblivion. And it was an amazing occasion. Now, that was then, right? Things have changed a little bit at Arsenal. And I mean, you know, there are elements. I mean, Mikel Arteta, remember when the Arsenal show came out at the beginning of last season? Mm-hmm. You probably still haven't watched it.
All or Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've watched it.
Oh, you watched it, yeah. And it was good.
Yeah.
I kind of found myself warming to this collection of guys. And also, Arteta's kind of quite earnest, quite sincere style. You know, but at the same time, is he really the kind of alpha, you know, who's going to seize the, you know, is he a bit too nice? And you see something like Arsenal putting out like a marker board where all the Arsenal players, he'd obviously got them to write down, how does playing at the Emirates make you feel? And they all had to write down a word, you know, so Saka was like, you know, they put their initials on their numbering. See, Saka's like special. Trossard, magical. Martinelli, excited. Jorginho, excited. Kivior, excited. Saliba, excited. You're like, come on, guys. Gabriel Jesus, honored. Martin Odegaard,
scared.
No, Martin Odegaard just
bored.
Wrote, love. And I'm like, well, you know.
Grammatically.
Yeah, but okay. You know. Okay. Havertz, enjoyment. Rhys Nelson, proud. Smith Rowe, powerful. Zinchenko, pleasure. Suarez, unique. Raya, confident. White, I didn't see Ramsdale on this. Or Declan Rice, actually. Maybe he needed a separate blackboard to write all his words. But Raya, confident. White, privileged. Nketia, happy. Partey, good. Like, I hope Arteta isn't going to King Lear Partey over that, you know?
Yeah.
I think you need to be a bit more there. Thomas. But you see that and you're thinking, is this a bit sort of saccharine at the end of the day? You know, it's nice that they all write such positive words, but is this really what winning the Premier League is about? You know?
Well, maybe it is.
Well, then you see them play against Brentford, and Arsenal have become the biggest bunch of bastards in the Premier League. I mentioned the set piece coaches. So the guy at Arsenal is actually ex-Brentford, Nicolas Chauvert. He was Brentford then Man City, and now he went to Arsenal with Arteta. See what Arsenal do at set piece now. Klopp actually referred to it in his interview after the...
That's right, yeah, because Klopp has been asked to let into the... Let's criticise. So obviously Klopp feels it should have been a penalty in injury time.
And obviously it should have been a penalty.
We'll get into it in a little bit. But he was also asked about whether the corner should have stood because of the blocking that was going on. And he hadn't seen it. He's just like, I haven't seen it, I don't know. But like, I was watching Arsenal. They were doing lots of it and getting away with it. So I don't see why it would be a foul here.
Well,
obviously Liverpool got hit with the call against them recently, didn't they, for blocking?
Yeah, but I saw some people making it, drawing a comparison there, but it was wrong because, you know, there was one account, I can't remember which account, was like, tweeted a photo of like Ake sort of pushing against McAllister and saying, oh, you know, this is offside. He's in an offside position. Like, it's a corner. There is no offside.
The issue wasn't the blocking last time, it was the fact that he was in an offside position.
It was that he was blocking while offside.
An active player and so on.
So he couldn't be, so that's the reason they gave that decision. But it was kind of an unusual decision just in the sense of like all of the stuff that now happens at corners. And this Arsenal-Brentford game was an amazing display of this. Because Brentford are the team that you would think...
I was literally going to say it, they do it. Brentford, I remember Klopp saying about Brentford, about the chaos that they cause at corner kicks. They're all over that.
It's always been like a big part of their what they've been doing under Frank. You know, the Arsenal guy, Nicolas Chauvert, worked with Thomas Frank before he went to City. You know, he hasn't obviously been there in a few years, but this has been a key focus for Brentford, is, you know, a bit like Stoke or whatever he used to do, making sure that you're good on set pieces, attacking defensive set pieces. But what Arsenal have done this season, which makes them different from last season, is they've added like a massive element of physicality to their game. I mean, I was quite impressed with it when they smashed Newcastle recently. I mean, it wasn't just that they outplayed Newcastle, they overran them, they overpowered them. And in this game against Brentford, which was one of these games, one of the games with the fewest ball in play time, it was an incredibly broken up game. What they're doing in set pieces is it's really pushing the rules, but in a way that, like, apparently everybody's just saying, well, okay. You know, you can sort of do that. Like, if you look at Ben White, Gabriel, Saliba, every time Arsenal get a corner, they're just going around causing absolute mayhem. Like, running around, pushing people, literally shoving. I mean, Ben White shoved someone to the ground, maybe it was Norgaard. The referee did, in fairness, say, hang on, let's do this. You can't do that. Yeah. But like, it seems like there's no cost to doing this, but you can get huge advantages from it. There's another moment, another corner where it ended with like the goalkeeper sort of making a save. It looked like maybe Arsenal were going to score. But if you can see, Ben White is actually lying in the goal mouth at the moment the keeper finally secures the ball. The reason he's lying there is because himself and Trossard have just tried to clear everyone out of the way. Like, they've just pushed straight into all the Brentford players at the near post to try and clear them out of the way.
Like NFL blockers.
Like, absolutely. Like I don't think you can do this in rugby, but I mean, it's like they're mauling them, trying to maul them back over the line.
You can't tackle them without the ball in rugby.
Yeah, so you can do at a Premier League set piece to try and create a space at the near post for someone who's going to attack what is now free space, because the guys who are trying to defend it have just been pushed over the goal line by Ben White. On this occasion, he actually pushes so hard that he's the one who falls into the goal. And which made you think, when you look back to the Rodri Højlund incident earlier in the season. Remember when Rodri was given a penalty? Now, I know it's the defensive player making a foul here, so it's a different situation when it's the attacking player's fouling. It's not like they can give away a penalty. But to see a penalty given for that, when this is the type of thing that players now do, it's like instructed by their specialist set piece coaches, guys, an underappreciated element of football is that there actually are no rules governing what players are allowed to do to pieces. So you can do anything. All you need to do is, you know, and so it's important we use our strength to push
people
around.
There's a very specific set of rules in relation to blocking in the NFL. You know, like that you can only touch like part of the pads and, you know, you're like, I actually think that if you had more faith in football's ability to come up with a series of coherent rules, then you'd be like, okay, let's just try and sort this out. But I would have zero faith in football coming up with a set of rules that would both make sense, clear up the problem, and not cause even more chaos than there currently is.
Yeah, I mean, because it's too difficult to define what the things are. And then once you define them, half of them are going to be missed anyway, or some of them will be punished. So it's a random or arbitrary punishment. So, you know, this is just the sort of thing that happens now. I mean, it's like it's always happened, but it's so much more organized.
I think of John Terry and Robert Huth for some reason. I feel like Chelsea used to get some goals where one of them would make the run and just slam into a defender at speed, occupying one of them, and then the other one would go and nod it into the back of the net. Can't remember which one was doing the blocking, which one was doing the scoring. Probably interchangeable.
Well, I mean, Terry famously pinning the Barcelona goalkeeper. Was it off Fred Rudhusp? He was probably gone by that. It was probably Luis Enrique. When Chelsea beat Barcelona at Stamford Bridge in 2005 or whatever, but one of the goals was just Terry had grabbed the goalkeeper at one side of it, and everyone was like, "That's fine."
So now it's like just more players, more moving parts to it.
More moving parts. Everybody's got a job. It's a completely organized move, and it's, you know, Arsenal are doing really well out of this on this occasion.
That's all great, but when are you going to admit you were wrong about Kai Havertz?
Well, Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz is a
mic
lucky.
Drop.
Kai Havertz is a lucky man, Owen.
Lucky, you know? Or really, because clever signing.
He owes a lot to his teammates and to the attitude that Arsenal have brought to the game. Because there's another component to this that what Arsenal are doing is pressure on the referee. Right, so there was a moment in the game when Nathan Collins was involved in like this running battle with Gabriel. Like, he was screaming at him. I'm not quite sure what he'd done that Gabriel had done that was so annoying to Collins. There was a moment, I think it was already 2-1 at this point, where it was, because it was the very end of the game, where Gabriel, Arsenal had another set piece. It was like a free kick outside the box, and a few of them were sort of running towards the far post, and Gabriel went down, and he was the player that goes down. It wasn't Collins who was the defender who allegedly brought him down. But what you noticed about it was the Arsenal players immediately jumping and in unison running to surround the referee and be. And this is what they were doing all game. And if you think back to that Hojlund-Rodri moment, that was also a key part of what City did. They, if they think it's a penalty, they're going to make sure the referee knows, because there's going to be a lot of players around them going, "That's a penalty, that's a penalty." This actually makes a big difference. You know, if you apply pressure to the referee over the game, if you can do that.
Well, I was watching the game yesterday with Alexis on the ground in the penalty area in the last
round.
Why
are you all playing on?
Get the hell up. Yeah. But I mean, I still think I was basically right, though, in that it's going to be looked at. You've made your point. You're writhing in agony. Get the hell up so that you can at least have a second chance at scoring this goal before or after VAR decided to have the team.
Sorry, why is my Kai Havertz question being dodged here? Eight goals.
Because
eight goals in the Premier League,
professional,
three assists, and lots of cerebral coasting around the pitch.
Well, I mean, a shocker of a miss in the first half where he was through and just missed the goal. I mean, a bad one, you know. It wasn't like Luis Diaz. It was he was cruising. He was gliding, Kai Havertz. And he tried to chip and he just missed the goal, usually. That was a shocker. Then he should have been sent off, Owen, for a dive. Against Nathan Collins, no less.
Have you no patriotic pride, Owen? He tried to make a mug out of our Nathan.
He tried to get a penalty, which, when Nathan Collins had gone for a tackle, then decided, I'm not going to get that ball, so I'll pull my leg back here.
So you're glorifying the shithousery at corners, but not diving.
No, I'm saying that Arsenal's pressure on the referee created the conditions for Kai Havertz to survive his own mistake.
Which was to dive. What should have been a sending off?
It should have been a second yellow card. And then he scored the winning goal.
There you go. Score the winning goal.
A few minutes after that. Yeah. No, he has been on a good...
Which one of Kai Havertz and Darwin Nunez is going to finish as a league champion this year again? That's the big question.
Possibly neither.
I think there's still a pretty good chance both of them end up empty-handed after stellar personal seasons.
They might have to make do
with the PFA Footballer of the Year award.
It has been suiting him, I think, more to play as a false nine. Remember the position in which he played a lot for Chelsea and didn't always impress, but I think he works better in the Arsenal team in that position than he has been doing when they've played him in midfield, or Arsenal look better with three people who aren't Kai Havertz in the midfield. And then he can concentrate on maybe the finishing aspect, which has always been a strength of his. But yeah, overall, I would say this is an Arsenal team that has added the things that were missing. Long term under Wenger, but I suppose to some extent were there last season, but I feel like they've brought a new level of it to it.
I think you're okay.
Sounded wrong.
But don't worry, Ken. Not as wrong as you were about Kai Havertz, so it's fine.
And so it turns out that we have another title decider.
31st of March, Arsenal. Manchester City versus Arsenal, I should say.
Is that not next weekend?
No, it's the weekend after. The 31st of March, Ken.
Oh, right.
Yep. Well, we can't have two title deciders one week after another.
Oh, I thought
it was post international break.
Post international break. Well, yeah. You know, it would be more interesting to see them play each other in their current rhythm, I would say. I mean, who knows what the international break is going to do. But it's going to be a good game. I think Arsenal are going to push Man City around a little bit. We didn't even talk about Ramsdale. It was a bad moment for him. I mean, the only reason he was playing was Raya is on loan. From Brentford, still. So he couldn't play against them, and Ramsdale came in and obviously made this terrible mistake right before halftime. I think that was maybe the best moment for him to do it. Like, in the sense of, he could go into the team. Arteta would say, listen, guys, everyone go to the whiteboard and write down a word that Aaron Ramsdale makes you feel. And they all wrote like, you know. And
frustrated.
By the end, everyone was crying, especially Ramsdale.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all had a big hug. And then they came out and he played quite well. You know, he made a good save from Tony.
Yeah.
He had a couple of good throws.
Good save from Nathan Collins.
Yeah. Collins had a bit directly at him, maybe a little bit. Still, it was a good header by Collins.
Yeah, it was.
As opposed to if he'd done it after 10 minutes or something and then had to be there for the next sort of 30 minutes, feeling the, you know, maybe not everybody in the Emirates is as positive as the actual players, you know, who have been schooled by Arteta in, you know, positivity. Yeah. And
what an unbelievable opportunity Aaron has given us all to show
our character.
So that we can show our character, but also how much we love Aaron Ramsdale. Yeah. Aaron, look, we're going to win this game for you. That's how much we love you.
Yeah, and then at the end, he's just like, thanks, guy. He literally posted,
it's called teamwork,
like,
Owen. Don't be casting your rolling your eyes at that. That's called teamwork.
The teammates, the fans. And so eight league wins in a row has put them back at the top and looking really strong. So obviously a great result as well for them on Sunday. I think that was the best result they could have got. And now it's sort of in their hands. Shea Given had the strange formula on Match of the Day that this is in Liverpool's hands now. And I was thinking, is it? And he explained his reasoning, which is that Man City are going to beat Arsenal. Therefore, it's in Liverpool's hands because they're a point ahead of Man City. Mm. So if they win all their games, they will win the league because Man City are going to beat Arsenal. Well, I would argue it's in Arsenal's hands.
Yeah, I mean,
I would say Arsenal.
Strictly speaking, you'd have to say that, like, that entire phrase does mean if you win all your games, then it doesn't matter what happens anywhere else.
Yeah,
and in that respect, it is in Arsenal's hands.
They're level on points, to be fair, but owing to the sensational form of players like Kai Havertz, they have built up a big goal difference advantage of what, 7 goals. And, so they're in good shape. Where are we? Oh, we did mention Villa, Owen.
Oh, yeah.
John McGinn had bigged this one up. Villa against Tottenham, fourth against fifth. It's probably, in a league fixture, the most important game in the club's recent history, said John McGinn. The players are aware of that. If I feel over the next couple of days that the boys are not aware, I'll remind them. So that was John McGinn. What McGinn did then... I mean, when Ederson does it, we're used to Ederson doing this type of thing. But when it's unusual for an outfield player to do this.
You're not wearing the goalkeeping cloak of, infallibility there, John. That will be a red card.
It just was like just a kind of a mad moment. I mean, Villa already were losing. Tottenham, who are obviously still behind them in the league, looked so much better. Villa just have, even when you think about what they did to Manchester City, and indeed, as Chris Wilder said, Sheffield United, for them, they were just so kind of tired, like lacking in intensity, apart from, and maybe this is why McGinn did this. You know, he's like, where's the energy? Where's the fire, lads? And then went and absolutely booted Destiny Doge and gets sent off, killing the team. It was.
He followed Keno's advice. You know, go kick some.
Just to make me feel better. They have lost four out of the last five home games. Newcastle 3-1, Chelsea 3-1, Man United 2-1. They beat Forest 4-2. Now they've lost to Spurs 4-0. So
just let Man United in there. I know they're 8 points clear, but, you know, keep losing games. This is reliant on also Manchester United being consistent for the rest of the season, which might be a big ask.
Yeah.
I think Man United are going to go on a 3-game winning streak. It looks like they've finally ironed out some of the problems, and then they will lose to someone ridiculous. I think Villa are safe enough. I think Villa will still finish in the top five.
We've got that bit better quality. We've just got to make it count. It might be a knob end. Is it too much to ask? In 91st minute, that wins it.
So basically, like, any chance you train? I think I really said something under his breath about Johnny or something.
You're always on the team until never fuck.
Roy, isn't he? I'm sure there's lessons to be learned by everybody.
And Harry just gone, Roy, I'm not speaking to you like this, like, you know, I'm not listening to you.
When I got the sack at Sheffield United, the only guy that spoke to me was Roy Keane. I'll never forget that. And I thought that was a bit of class.
We've got that bit better quality, and we just got to make it count.
He called me f***ed.
It might be a knob end in 91st minute that wins it.
Dion, how are you?
Good, Owen, how are you?
Gavin, how's the form?
Good.
Thanks
good.
So much to the two of you for making it in. We might have just witnessed the final ever installment of the Klopp-Guardiola rivalry that's defined the Premier League for much of the last decade. The question I want to ask you is, which one is a better manager? More specifically, if the FAI were to pull either a Klopp or a Pep-shaped rabbit out of the hat and announce them in a few weeks' time in early April, Gavin, which one would you prefer it to be?
It'll be the one, obviously the 42 will have to rule out Pep Guardiola.
You're such buzzkill, stop ruling everyone out.
Before appointing Jurgen Klopp. I think the answer might be Klopp, to be honest. I think that Guardiola is obviously genius, but he's a genius in a very kind of esoteric way. He works with like the best players on the planet, and he's just this genius about kind of negating diminishing returns. He just stretches those out and makes like 80-point teams into 95-point teams, whereas Klopp has showed a broader range of talents. And like we talked about, you know, can Klopp, is this the season where he begins building his second team? It's built. He's done it, like. And the style of play has been completely overhauled. It's completely different to what it was in his first team. And it was evident in the second half yesterday where they completely outplayed Manchester City. Like, we always talk about these games and the Anfield atmosphere and the intensity of Liverpool and the pressing, and they get about City and unruffle them. But they also completely outplayed them.
I want to come back to what you said there, the second part. But, Dion, what's your take on the first part?
Yeah, I think this season.
Forget about Ireland. Just who's the
forget
better
about
manager.
Okay.
Who's the better
I think Ireland.
Because Klopp,
happy.
I think, yeah.
I don't think Ireland are a helpful
no,
element
here.
In this discussion.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like the idea of, you know, either one of them being, you know, can you do a better job than Pep Guardiola, who was your rival for the Ireland job? I think Klopp, especially as I think this season has again demonstrated that ability of Klopp to be able to find solutions to things. Now, at the same time, there are down years with Klopp. Like, you know, last year you would say, okay, everything is gone. Like, when things go wrong with Klopp, everything goes wrong. Which happened during the COVID season, with COVID being locked, you know, empty grounds being a huge factor in that. And then last season when they, you know, again, they were kind of spent. But to actually work with players, again, looking at yesterday's game, work with players that aren't necessarily the players you would want to have on the field, whereas City have everybody they need. I think Klopp is a more ingenious manager in that sense. I agree with Gavin. I think Guardiola, for somebody who like who has kind of thought about the game, you know, he's been in a very privileged position where he's been able to say, right, I'm going to think great thoughts and develop great ideas about the game with the best players,
which have all worked largely.
Yeah, it have all worked and have been fascinating and have been how would you describe how they've been to watch? They've been interesting to observe. But with Klopp, I think it is also a more exciting project to watch. That's the other thing about Liverpool compared to City.
Do you sound a bit like Trent Alexander-Arnold? I mean, is that what you're getting at there? More exciting? How? I mean, more exciting than Erling Haaland? Raining destruction.
Of course, yes. Liverpool are more exciting than Manchester City. Like nobody, only Manchester City supporters.
More exciting than the treble, Dion?
Yes, more. The treble compared to the Manchester United treble. It's Manchester City's treble for loads of reasons. We know all this, and it's not just Pep Guardiola's fault. But we know all this. We know why Manchester City haven't captured anybody's imagination. Are very few people's imagination. It's because people don't. It is Team Sky. It is this. People look at it and go, that is a very interesting project you have put together with lots of developments that are very good and very ingenious. But it leaves most people cold. It leaves a lot of people cold. There is no huge. United in 99 is a perfect example where everybody this was a pursuit that gripped everybody. Manchester City's treble didn't really grip anybody.
They're much more like some great teams. They're a lot more relatable when they're being put to the pin of their collar a bit, like they were yesterday, as Gavin was saying. Liverpool, who hadn't outplayed. Klopp seemed very happy with the overall game. Felt to me like it was only really in the second half that Liverpool got to grips with it, and when they did, they dominated.
Well, this is actually the thing that I was thinking about your first answer, because you said the new team is built, it's already done, and also the style of play is completely different. So could you first of all explain what's completely different about this style, and secondly, if he's saying the team is built, do you think another coach could just come in and take this collection of players? I mean, you saw the team that played yesterday. Most of their sort of first choice back five wasn't there. You know, Mo Salah, who's been their main player in this game, wasn't there, and still get everybody playing to that level where they kind of outplay Manchester City. Like, I mean, I just don't know if another manager could take those elements and be like, well, it's obvious how these fit together.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that the standard of performances he's getting from the fringe players is remarkable. Like, that was a Europa League lineup that they had at the start of that game. Maybe Van Dijk aside, they're missing five or six starter players. So the performances he's getting from guys, from young players coming into the squad is absolutely remarkable. They obviously are helped in that they have a kind of a clear tactical plan for what they have to do, but there is some kind of emotional connection or relatability there that they just want to play with this guy. I mean, Conor Bradley talked about we have to cherish every moment here. Like, they talk about Klopp, like the Argentinian players talked about Messi at the last World Cup. Like, we have to make the most of the privilege that we have to be around this guy. So the bad news for Liverpool fans is there will absolutely be a drop-off when Xabi Alonso or whoever else comes in. But in terms of a different team, look at the size of them. Harvey Elliott, like Alexis McAllister, they're in midfield. They're small guys. They would have been... They're more Guardiola-style players, really.
Well, even though Guardiola's gone the other way.
Yeah.
He's got the beefcakes.
Is McAllister not comparable to Wijnaldum, sort of, you know? Is Wijnaldum...
Maybe to an extent. It feels like kind of he's slower and got kind of less athletic capacity. And we've seen that exposed at, you know, in the away game against Manchester City when he was playing at six. I just think that they're more... It's a much more technical midfield now. Maybe by necessity, because the quality of their forward players, unfortunately, isn't as good as it was previously. I mean, how often have we seen in previous games against Man City that Salah plays that ball in behind and Sadio Mane is running onto it off the back of Walker and puts it in, whereas Diaz unfortunately misses the chances that he has. So I think, and Klopp said it afterwards, like that second half, that they'd never outplayed City like that before.
I think, yeah, that was an interesting line from Klopp. I think he's still trying to build this team. I don't think it's built, and I think those comments are part of the process of trying to kind of kind of encourage them along, because I think the Liverpool, his first Liverpool team would be 5 points clear at the top of the table now, because of, you know, you look at Arsenal at home, you look at Manchester United at home, you look at City yesterday. These are games I think that team would have won, and for all the reasons Gavin's outlined, because they don't take their chances the way that team did. And so I think the team is still a work in progress, which means I think there's even more downside when Klopp leaves, because everything is like, I like looking at it from, you know, even any manager coming in is going to want to do, unless a manager comes in and says to Van Dijk, what have you guys been doing all this time? Just take, you know, keep doing that. Carry, you know, unless a manager is totally happy to just be a facilitator of what's been going on. Yeah. He's going to ask them to do things that they haven't been doing before. Maybe it'll make it better, but there's going to be players going, there's going to be that little bit of doubt and friction where they say, well, hold on now, this is not the way we did it when we were, you know, beating and competing with every team, all the best teams in Europe. And now you're asking us to do something different. And also, I just don't think there's those players then, that, you know, as Gavin says, like Diaz, Nunes, like for all their quality, and Diaz was exceptional yesterday, for all their qualities, there's still that big downside for them, that they haven't taken their chances. And I still feel that'll come back to haunt them in the title race.
What was so good about them yesterday? Or who was so good, do you think?
Van Dijk played really well. I mean, I don't really think anyone, anything played bad. From, you could say Diaz, who missed a series of good chances. He should have scored at least one, but he also did some unbelievable things.
Well, as I was saying earlier, I mean, missing big chances makes these days, I think, it makes me like a player more.
Yeah.
The idea that they could easily sky this or hit it 5 yards wide, but they're going to do something amazing, like take on Manchester City's two most brutish defensive players.
Yeah, you just like any player who can be called El Loco.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's El Loco, then. But, I mean, you know, I thought Endo was brilliant. And that, I mean, that's a really interesting example as well. This guy comes in, like, you know, he's kind of the third choice or the third prize player that they get, having tried to sign Caicedo and Lavia, and has been better than either of those players. And yesterday was better than Rodri, who is the best player in the world in that position. I mean, that's just phenomenal.
Like, yeah, it's extraordinary.
Who is the director of football that signed that guy? Why aren't Liverpool appointing him? Why isn't everyone getting really excited about getting the guy who signed Endo rather than the man who worked alongside
Jörg Schmeichel?
From an Irish angle, there is a slight argument to say that they're better with Kelleher there than Alisson.
Oh, go on.
His passing is better. He's two-footed in a way that Alisson is not.
Yeah.
Alisson is just right-footed, and he's had to learn this really weird kind of outside-the-foot movement, which against City...
Which he got injured doing.
Yeah, which against City has always resulted in him kicking it directly to Phil Foden, from which City often score goals. I mean, that's how they lost the one game at Anfield that they did lose against City.
There's no way he'd make him number one, though, because for one thing, Alisson would be straight out the club, I would imagine, unless he's a great pro who's going to hang around, whereas at the moment, it's just such a dream situation for a
club. Yeah, it's a great situation for them. And look, Alisson's probably a better shot stopper.
But the advance in Kelleher's advance over the last few...
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible, because, you know, he actually, you always felt there's a mistake going to happen with him, and you know he does let shots in that he should save at times, but not like this spell. He has been
was
phenomenal.
He a little flat footed for the goal? Could he have spotted that earlier? What was going on? And got over just a split second quicker.
I don't know. It was harsh. Very, very hard. A bit like that is.
I know what you're talking about. Like he did.
He's a little on his heels. Look, nobody knew it was coming except the Man City players.
Yeah, I think he was caught by surprise, like all the other players.
In the hierarchy of blame, I think McAllister was pushed out of the way a little bit too easy by Ake. Was it Darwin that was meant to be?
Yeah.
John Stones, he just fell
asleep.
And Kelleher nearly got there. Like, I mean,
he nearly saved it.
Like, if he's a couple of inches further to his left, it kind of bounces off his ribcage and out.
That his decision to stay there until he's now 25 and play so few games compared to Bazunu has been vindicated. And do you think that if, well, I mean, I don't know what you think about the first one, but should he be playing for Ireland in these games that are coming up in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, oh, he should definitely be playing for Ireland. I suppose with a friendly, O'Shea will get away with playing one Kelleher in one game and Bazunu in the other. The argument to play Bazunu over Kelleher is that he's playing every week, but Kelleher is now playing every week and at a higher level, so I definitely think Kelleher should start for Ireland. Has his decision to stay been vindicated? I mean, it's so contingent on Alisson just getting injured, you know, so it's hard to say. I mean,
he usually does at some point each season, before else.
Yeah, he's been warm on the bench to now without getting the opportunity to kind of get a run of games together to show how good he is. I don't know. I mean, if Liverpool do win Premier League, Kelleher will have been integral to it, yeah. And that in many ways will justify everything. But I'd imagine with all the change that's coming this summer, he may want to follow his boss out the door.
What do you think about that?
I think he should leave. Like he, you know, what he's done in the last few weeks has shown the qualities he has. And if you're, and I don't even think the Ireland situation has anything to do with it. Like, you know, I think he should be number one for Ireland, no matter what. But I don't think your career. I don't think you're defined. He's necessarily defining his career by whether he's number one for Ireland or not, but whether he should be defining his career by whether he's playing regularly
for a club.
Yeah. And he's not doing that. And it's great that he's had this run of games, but unless Liverpool do, unless when Michael Edwards comes back, he takes the big decision of, well, now we can sell, you know, we can sell Alisson for whatever we can get for him, and that, you know, that would be a kind of a Michael Edwards style decision, but it would be a risky one too, because
yeah.
Alisson ultimately is still a phenomenal goalkeeper. Unless that happens, I think he should leave, because it's just, you know, your career is best served by playing every week. You may never kind of reach the heights of playing for Liverpool at Anfield under Jurgen Klopp. But then again, Jurgen Klopp isn't going to be there, as Gavin says. So it could, it might never be as good for anyone at Liverpool again. But I think he definitely needs to leave.
And just finally on them, what do you think of these moves, which seem to be afoot and at an advanced stage to restore Michael Edwards as the, like, God Emperor of football, apparently? I mean, you know, not the sporting director, that's small beans to him now. He's now, like, really, really top. In a way, which I don't know how a new manager is supposed to deal with that. Like I said, this guy is my boss, but, like, this seems to be what they're doing. Bringing him in and then bringing in Richard Hughes from Bournemouth.
As the
in Michael Edwards, something more like Michael Edwards' old mini job.
I don't know if you saw. I just saw a clip of Dwight York on Being Sports with Richard Keys,
yeah.
Who has, you know, been pushing do anything to keep Jurgen Klopp agenda.
Yeah.
But Dwight York advanced the theory that Klopp would be back at Liverpool within a year or two, and when he was asked whether he had information or a hunch, he kind of said it was sort of somewhere between the two. Now, I don't know what that actually means, but
it means a hunch.
It doesn't mean a hunch, yeah. If you were thinking at some point that Jurgen Klopp's decision would his mind would change after 6 months or a year out of football or out of Liverpool, I don't think, you know, maybe Liverpool can't structure themselves because, you know, Klopp might change his mind. But at the same time, I think what they're doing now would unfortunately mean that Dwight York's theory isn't correct. What I would wonder, though, genuinely, without going full Richard Keys, is whatever Liverpool are offering Michael Edwards, did they offer that to Jurgen Klopp?
Mm.
Did they offer, like, there's talk of giving him equity in
FSG?
Do you want
50% of FSG?
You know, what do you want? What did Liverpool offer Klopp to stay? Mm-hmm. Now, maybe they did everything. Like, I'm surprised it hasn't come out. There's more, you know, what they did offer him.
Possibly the end of the season, that sort of stuff might get reported
maybe,
more.
Maybe, but, like, they're doing so much to get Edwards back. Yeah. And Edwards is, in the hierarchy of who is responsible for the success Liverpool have had, Edwards is there somewhere, but Jurgen Klopp is far, far ahead of him.
Yeah.
And I just would like to know why, you know, what they did in that regard. Now, maybe there's nothing that's going to change his mind, but I think it would have been worth seeing what could persuade him.
I'm not sure about this policy of appointing Bournemouth's sporting director, given Edwards' business plan was to sell players at an inflated price to Bournemouth sporting directors. So that might trouble them.
Jordan Ibe, Brad Smith, and
Solanke's worked out. But I think they needed some kind of structure. Like, Clough was basically the whole club. I think he admitted that in his farewell interview with the club website a couple of months ago. So it's good that they've a sense of structure there. But I do think that obviously Edwards will now be hailed as the returning genius. But I do think that while he's evidently very good at his job, Jurgen Klopp made him look pretty good.
One detail of the game, obviously, which we haven't discussed yet, is the last minute decision or non-decision. Just very briefly, what do you think, both of you, penalty or not penalty?
Penalty.
Penalty.
So it wasn't given. I mean, that was actually what Mike Dean said as well. It was quite interesting. What did you make of that, Dion? Mike Dean, as we know, is one of the commentary guys on. For some reason, we had Mike Dean rather than Carragher on the game, but he said he was basically like, oh no, he's caught him on the fall through. He's caught him high up in the chest. He's got him right in the chest. I think he's in trouble. And then the ref, they announced it wasn't going to be a penalty. Check complete.
Yeah.
At which point he said, oh yeah, it's just coming together.
Well, first of all, when referees are going to, you know, interfere with the commentary, I like to be warned about it. You know, BT always did the kind of, you know, we're going to bring in Peter Walton here, so you could kind of just go, okay, I'm going to hear some inanity now. Whereas Mike Dean just keeps jumping in. You're enjoying yourself, and then you have this, like, you know, like with the actual penalty, like he comes out, like, you know, Ederson like karate kicks Darwin Núñez, and Mike Dean comes in to say that's a penalty, yep. And you're like, cheers, mate, and. Yeah, like his reverse ferret on the Doku one was extraordinary. Like,
it's crazy.
Just,
what's the point in having them there? Because the problem for people is that they're just going to back up their mates. You know, that they're not going to want to put any extra pressure on these by calling out wrong decisions. That's the fear. And then when the decision is called a certain way, and then he changes it based on what the actual result is. Like, I could have done that myself. Gone on and said, oh, that looks like a penalty, and then no, oh yeah, well maybe not. You know, not enough to overturn that.
He'd be a benefit there if he explained the rules. There is an odd time where there's an arcane handball decision or offside decision that not everyone understands. But he doesn't explain the rules. He kind of interprets how the referee might interpret it, and then has to interpret how the VAR might interpret it, and as a result ends up giving his opinion occasionally and then reverse ferrets to justify the referee's interpretation of things. It's a complete waste of time having him on commentary. Why is he on TV? No one wants to hear so much about referees.
Yeah, well, definitely not. They're literally just going to back up whatever the thing is that's just happened, depending on what that outcome is. But just on City... game obviously didn't go well, although I think it's still a good result for them. You know, I mean, in the sense that it looked for a while like they were going to lose, and they didn't, and the game had gone out of their control, and they kind of got it back in control for the last part of the game. And, you know, I think that they looked happy enough, actually, leaving the field. But do you think they have slipped a bit? I was wondering why this wasn't really flowing for them. I was wondering, if are they actually missing Jack Grealish? Like, they were playing Alvarez as a left winger and he did nothing. Like, you know,
he just gives the ball away so often. Grealish, you know, all the kind of the interesting elements of Grealish have been hammered out of him by Guardiola, but Marty Perrineau, the guy who seems to be Guardiola's approved biographer,
I think he's got another one coming,
right, has been he described Guardiola's base or Grealish is being like, he's the guy who freezes time. He gets on the ball, holds on to it, maybe he draws a foul, but he allows City get in older positions in which they can start threading passes to open up the opposition and won't be caught in the counter-attack. So I think he maybe misses some of his kind of the sensible nature that he brings to the game. It was the first time I've ever watched City and I thought, these guys look a bit old.
You know, old?
I did think so. Like, Rodri looks stressed and slow. Is the worst I've ever seen Bernardo Silva play in one of these games. And then, like, six of that starting team were there before Guardiola actually won his first league title. Like, it is, you know, he's still quite reliant on a core of older players. And Liverpool have had to go through that a transition already where the legs fell off their first team. Obviously, City don't have to run as much, so you can squeeze more out of them and have a deeper squad and seem to have fewer injuries and so forth. But it's the first time I was like, yeah, maybe they are beginning to age a bit. And I know we talk about it as a positive that they can spend 100 million on Grealish or Gvardiol and just leave them on the bench for a year to learn the ropes, but maybe they need these guys to make more of an impact now.
It's also the when you have Alvarez giving the ball away, as Gavin says, and then you have Haaland being like, you know, doing nothing when he doesn't score. Like that, there is a huge reduction in that kind of Guardiola style when those two are on the field. And like Haaland isn't a Guardiola type of player.
Are you saying you don't think he's that good?
How could you say that?
Are you saying he sounds a bit like that? Is what you're saying?
Well, no, it's just he's one of these players who
doesn't do anything. Isn't a Guardiola type of player.
When he scores, he's obviously, you know, he's there because of how lethal he is in front of goal. But when, you know, when he plays like he did yesterday, you know, you kind of can see why. You know, you'd love to know what Pep is actually thinking there about, you know, what he, you know, again, that overactive genius mind wondering what he could do.
In a way, Kevin De Bruyne isn't a Guardiola player in terms of the obsession with possession and control and all those kind of things. It was a really stark example yesterday that De Bruyne is a bit different to the rest of those Manchester City players, which is usually a good thing because he's a guy who will try the killer pass, but it's like, sorry mate, this isn't your kind of game. Get off. And he was fucking human.
Ah, yeah. I mean, right. Guardiola has that Ferguson quality of he is happy to indulge pure talent. I think that is one of the things that sets him apart, and did it with Messi, most obviously, and has done it with De Bruyne. De Bruyne seems to have a relatively free role in that team. And if Haaland's scoring goals, maybe that's enough. But it was striking just how little he did yesterday, how he was dominated by Van Dijk. And, you know, the mind did go back to Thierry Henry's piece on Monday Night Football about Haaland, which is brilliant, after the Manchester Derby, where there's, you know, there's all this room for him to drop off and take the ball into feet, and he just didn't do it.
Well, maybe, I mean, surely though, I mean, the thing with Henry's piece, and I saw it and I didn't think it was interesting, but like, if Haaland is doing that still at this point, then it's because he's been told to do that, right? I mean, he's there. If Guardiola wanted him to drop deep for those types of situations that Henry was talking about and he wasn't doing it, Guardiola would drop him.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, Henry himself talks about, you know, well, you know, having to stand on the line, on the touchline, and whenever he moved in field, like Guardiola substituting him or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but I was surprised that it was De Bruyne that came off and not him, I have to say. I thought when they needed more control in midfield, I thought maybe you actually sacrifice him and put, you know, Foden as a false nine or something.
That is the thing. And I also think that himself and De Bruyne are such a partnership that if you're going to take off De Bruyne, you might as well take off Haaland as well.
Because like,
no one else is going to pass him the ball.
Well, hang on, would Haaland have thrown a strop as well? So he would have had to go talk to De Bruyne, calm him down, talk to Haaland, spend the rest of his match just placating his star players.
That's why he didn't do it. Like, imagine if the board goes up, you know, the City are under the cosh.
He's still
taking
off
De Bruyne and Haaland. Okay, yeah, maybe he did want to do that and then realized that he couldn't do that. You know, it just would have seemed a bit too much. But they did. I mean, he said afterwards that we need to get control of the game. And basically, Kovacic just kept the ball. And, you know, that worked out for them. So.
And we are forgetting, like, Doku hit the post. And I don't know how it didn't bounce out to Phil Foden rather than into Keller's arms. Like, that, in fairness, Liverpool, although it should have had a penalty and should have won the game with a balance of chances. But that was a major let-off.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw any of Andrew Mbabadeli against Evan Ferguson. One of them scored. One of them scored in the end, but not the way that we would have hoped. What do you think is going on with Big Ev?
Yeah, he's obviously not scoring. He is only 19. I mean, I know this is always framed as...
Well, I mean, last year
he was only 18 banging in all those goals.
So, like, yeah.
This is always framed like, oh, should we be worried about Evan Ferguson's run of form? I was just like, who are we to worry about things as trivial as that?
I'm not saying we should be worried, because I mean it's not as though he's suddenly become a bad player. It's just like, why has he not scored in what 20 games now?
Yeah,
it's mad considering what he had been doing up to then. I would never have expected there would be 20 matches. I know he hasn't played 90 minutes in all his matches, but like, what's happening here?
Well, yeah, see, yeah, I think we're it's kind of it's a luxury belief, as people say these days. You know, that we should worry about Evan Ferguson not progressing at the speed we, I guess, all expected him to just to go in a sort of an upward curve constantly. But he is only 19, and it's not going to be that way. And you're also dealing with a Brighton team that are just, you know, it's gone wrong. It has gone wrong for them. And you look back to the way they were being talked about last season, and that's clearly not how things are going for them this season. So I think his overall talent, his general potential remains the same. It's just a disappointing season for him. I think still he remains the player that we can still get excited about Evan Ferguson. We don't need to deny ourselves that.
Are you blaming Roberto De Zerbi then for this? I think it's only 19 matches. Actually, I'm just looking at it here. I think it's 19. So since his last goal against Nottingham Forest,
well, like De Zerbi has, you know, it's gone. De Zerbi isn't being, like last season, you look at the way Brighton were talked about and the way De Zerbi was talked about. It was just, we are dealing with another, here comes another, generational
Pep
genius.
Pep himself would say that, to be fair.
Maybe he's actually quite interesting in the terms of, like, you know, like Pep, he has these incredible, these wonderful ideas, but unlike Pep, he now has to try and implement them constantly with players who aren't quite...
He doesn't have Pep players,
so there's going to be downsides and downtimes. But I don't know if I'd blame him for what's happening, although he hasn't helped with some of the comments he's made about Ferguson. But
the injuries have killed him, though. Obviously, they sold their midfield in the summer. No March, no Matoma. They've lost a load of their pace in wide areas. Like some of the games, like this, the whole system is Ferguson drops off, gives the ball to the wide players, then sprints up to the penalty area to meet their crosses. But there's been times that James Milner has been playing in Matoma's position, you know? And Ferguson is, if you look at like percentage of shots on target, he's top of the league for it. Mm. He's the most accurate player in the league. But in terms of the number of shots he averages per match, he's 50th or something. So he basically just needs to take more shots. He's not getting any. He had none again at the weekend. He used to take some responsibility for that, but
he's in the third percentile for touches in the attacking penalty area.
Yeah.
The third percentile. That's 97% of them are better than him.
Oh, for that.
The third is bad. 97 okay. would be the equivalent good one. That's kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah, look, he's had injury niggles. He had been unwell, I think, and had taken a bit of time to shake it off. And he's also not always the absolute focal point of Brighton's attack. Like when João Pedro plays alongside him, he has more shots than him. And he's also on penalties. We'd be anti if we gave Ferguson penalties. Out of goal scoring form, but no major worry from here.
Okay, sounds good. Gavin, Dion, brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks, lads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's Amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I said, Karen, it's Richard Keys.
Order!
Prehistoric banter.
Please, it was just banter.
Is not acceptable in a modern world.
Do you have any regrets?
None. There are some dark forces at work here.
The eyes have it. The eyes have it. Unlock!
One more bit of football news before we go. Brano, if you would join us for a moment, please, to pay tribute to the departed Bohemians manager, Declan Devine.
Yeah, definitely pay tribute. I really like Declan Devine, the person. But I suppose Declan Devine, the Bohs manager, didn't really work out.
Beaten 2-0 by Shells. That's hardly... Well, a sackable offence, is it?
You see, it is kind of weird.
There's four games in,
one game snowed off, and you sack the manager who's like spent pre-season, I presume it was him, building the squad, yeah, buying these players. So it's kind of like, did the board, the people, the decision makers just realise four games in, oh, maybe this is not working out, and get rid of him? It seemed the mood around the place was that after the cup final, you know, and after missing out on Europe on the last day of last season, that Declan, he's only been in Canberra like a year. He probably should have went after the cup final, and then you start building up then. To do this after four games, even though everyone kind of knew already that it wasn't really work out, is kind of strange. But hey, I get to indulge in another manager hunt, and that's exactly...
Oh, well, I might ask you about that, but I liked Declan Devine very much when he came into studio.
If you give him a chance, I think he's got the balls to push it through.
Oh, such a good voice.
Is that the greatest voice we've ever had? Oh,
I think it might be. It is right up there.
Then, of course, there was the FAI Cup Final. The pre-Cup Final rallying call. And how much of a legend would he have been, I suppose, if they had won that match? Yeah. And that's just one. That's one match, one cup final, you win that.
Dorite checks your butt can cash.
Well, he'd written another check he couldn't cash when he said, I haven't come down here from Derry, Donegal to finish sixth, and then we went and finished sixth. Mm. And then he said, I'm bringing that fucking cup back. Mm-hmm. It was kind of his last throw of the dice.
Yeah.
It was like, I need, like, we've missed out on Europe here. I need to, like, I remember being in the stand when he was saying that, and it was like, me and my mates were like, oh, God. Can you not just, like, not say shit?
It was a bit like Pochettino before the Carabao final, I think, you know, where he put out a big thing saying, you know, we're gonna do it, lads. Yeah, and you're like, you don't know, but you're placing a bet.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah,
sometimes you lose.
Yeah, yeah. So who's it gonna be then? Stephen Kenny?
Are there any names?
Slaven Bilic?
Is
there a vacuum of leadership at Bose?
Who's gonna do it on?
if the problems are structural, as you appear to agree with us. I think that's a given. We can all agree the problem with Bulls is...
Sprano can't say things like that and still expect to get that gig bringing the bus onto the pitch.
Yeah, I need to... That's been abandoned this year.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Who would I like to see as Bulls manager?
Are you taking meetings about the leadership?
Stephen Kenny, I think he's probably too pricey for Bulls. I've heard whispers of his fee, and I think it's out of our league. Jim Crawford has been stuck in that Ireland role for like the last decade.
Nurturing the next generation.
Yeah. Let's bring him in. And then Ken, as you said, Damien Duff, but not quite Damien Duff, Joey O'Brien.
Oh.
Duff's assist in the Shells. He's done his apprenticeship. Let's give him a big gig.
This often doesn't work.
Or
the brain, the assistant goes elsewhere to do their own job. Yeah. Sometimes it does. Look, it can
I wonder, will Richie Dunne throw his hat back in the ring? He tried to go for it last time, didn't get it. But Owen, any of your mates at Virgin?
Well, I think you're talking about Premier Sports, not Virgin.
Virgin? No, that's the other guy. That's Joe Malloy.
Premier Sports, Prado, yes.
Premier Sports, yeah. I don't know. Kenny?
I can ask.
Neil?
Neil was busy throwing his hat into the Aberdeen ring yesterday. Okay. Because Neil Warnock just quit
just
randomly.
Walked out.
Yeah. Says, thanks, lads.
I've enjoyed it.
Good to leave on a win. See you later.
Yeah.
Post-match. So that one could be the most likely destination.
It was interesting, though, in Daily Mount on Friday. Like that, it was two losses in 5 days, the draw of the game and then the Shells game. And the way Daily Mount is, like the dugout's on the far side. So he has to walk right across the pitch and then down the tunnel. And like the whoever had actually stayed around, like there was a mass exodus in like the 85th minute. It was like booing, a lot of catcall and a lot of, and I was like, ugh. And Devine was kind of just like nodding to the stand, you know, he took it well, but I was like, God, there's no way to be living, you know, who would want to do this job? But what I did find out on Friday is, and I can put this on record, Damien Duff is a very good football manager. He's like just total 2005 Mourinho, knows how to set up a team. You know, no one can say otherwise. If his brain or his half brain was to come to Daniel.
Well, this is after your... Well, you're just trying to backtrack from your scathing attack on David Snaid, who had Shells down as preseason title contenders. Thanks, Brano. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Brano. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Owen.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you,
Brano. Troubled times at Dalier.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you during the week in the World Service. All episodes are ad-free in that scenario. Second Captain's Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'll tell you. was that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys. It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.